Blog Talk Radio.
Glowing in a bed of coals, the poet is born. Our story is riddled with challenges and changes, like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled into shape. If only forging a poet were that easy. Emotional development, relationships, experiences, environment, and genetics all take a hand in molding the poet we are today. So welcome to Double Helix, where we examine the X's and the Y's on a show celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what ties the room together. Get comfortable, because what you're about to hear is the poetry we are made of. This is Double Helix on Late Night Poets Blog Talk Radio. We are a group on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can read along with us and talk to us in the chat. I'm Aphasiana, and with me I have Dan Deschino. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Phasey. What is happening? I missed you. It seems like we haven't been together for a while.
Thank you. It has been a while. I missed you, too. I was just traveling around the British Columbia coast. I saw some
Amazing.
Orcas and seals. It was a great
Oh, wow. So live, no, you didn't see the orcas eating the seals, did you? I don't know if I'd enjoy that.
No. If they did, it was under the water. I did not see them together.
Okay.
But, right, it was hard to see the orca. First, the big tail came out, and then nobody believed me that it was there until they saw some dorsal fins popping out. It was not the entire orca that we got to see, but there were three distinct shapes out there.
That's still amazing. I've never seen one. I mean, I live in New England here. You think I would have been on a whale watch at this time, but I never have been. So orcas, they're the real kings of the sea, you know, because they're the largest carnivores in the world, right? So they're the And they're smart, too, if you study about them. So that's amazing. I would love to see one of those. I got to get to the Pacific Ocean someday. But, yeah, it's so great to have you back. You know, we missed you in the last show, but it went well, and I'm really excited to hear. We've been I have a couple of contests, but we have a contest of yours that's actually been waiting a little while. You just won a month or so ago. That's been waiting for you, so we're very excited to do that. Yeah, and get going here. I think we had, I don't know if they're still around, but I know Stelina was on the board and Bill Schiller was on the board about an hour ago. Phil, by the way, I just want to thank Phil because she reached out to me and said, "Hey Dan, don't you guys have any SoundClouds?" And I was like, "Oh shoot, I could have sworn it was totally my fault too. I could have sworn that you said that you were putting them on and you weren't. It's not your fault at all. It was my fault." So Phil saved us as usual and, got our one SoundCloud in, but got it in, so excited for that. But, yeah, we should, if you want to get going, we can. I'm excited to start your contest here.
Me too. Also, shout-out to Naomi, who's on the board as well.
Hey, Naomi.
All right. So our contest, the first contest that we're going to go into is quotes by Arthur Miller. Quotes from his plays. And the first one is, "I may think of you softly from time to time, but I'll cut off my hand before I ever reach for you again." So that was by Arthur Miller in The Crucible. And the first entry to that is by Jenny the Deep. So Dan, I'm going to get you to read that first one for us.
I would love to. I'm going to start off with a quick Arthur Miller story, too. So when I was a kid, my sister's much older than me, and she went to Merrimack College in Massachusetts. And so I was probably 8 or 9 years old. And when she graduated, I was probably 12 or so, 13 when she graduated college. And Arthur Miller was the speaker at her graduation. And I distinctly remember standing after the graduation, standing on the side with my father and Arthur Miller, like standing by himself, and my father saying, "Arthur Miller's just standing all by himself. I'm going to go talk to him," and going to talk to him. And for some reason, he didn't bring me. And I had no idea at that age who Arthur Miller was, and I probably should have. But so my story is not necessarily good one. I didn't get to meet Arthur Miller, and I always think back, why didn't my father bring me over to meet Arthur Miller? So I didn't get to meet Arthur Miller, but I remember that moment specifically, which is interesting.
That's pretty
anyway,
close,
I don't know
though. You got to see Arthur Miller. That's exciting.
Yeah, I don't remember the speech. I mean, I was young enough that I didn't care. I guess I wasn't into that kind of stuff, you know, so I didn't really know who he was. But I always remember, like, man, I wish if my father brought me over and I could have said I met Arthur Miller, that would have been, that would have been pretty cool. Anyway, just a rambling old man story for me, so I will read Jenny of the Deep. It's called Engaged to be Dismayed. Engaged to be married until she went astray. Thought she was the love of his life. Ended up being a nightmare instead. On the verge of taking his life. As his heart burns in pain, can he still be engaged? Dismayed, disconnected, debating his choices. Can't trust her, but still loves her. Nothing will ever be the same again. For the children, he won't give up, but faith in her, he has lost. Always, he'll be dismayed. Never do they smile. Laughter has subsided, replaced with speculation as his love still holds true, but he cannot trust. She lied too many times for him. Nothing can be the same. Not for these two. Never. End poem.
That's very sad. Definitely does not end on a hopeful note there. Again, Jenny's been doing the format of Rictameter, which is really cool. It looks really neat. Each stanza starts with the same word that it ends with, and it uses syllables to make a count of syllables to make it so like each stanza is a diamond, where it starts off short, gets bigger in the middle, and then goes small again. For me, I really liked the part where it's talking about the laughter, because I feel like that's a big sign of things changing. When the laughter has subsided, that's really sad. The word choices of like astray and speculation, I liked those two words put in here, but it's a very sad piece, and it fits the prompt nicely. What did you think, Daniel?
It is very sad. I've been following Jenny since she started coming on here, actually, and she's been very interesting to read. She's written a lot almost on this subject, and I hope that it's I think it's personal as well too, not her, but somebody she knows, and so I hope I hope that's not true, that somebody was having an infidelity problem that she knew, and I hope it didn't actually end in divorce or in leaving, you know. Trust, she covers trust in here, and that's something that is really hard to gain back again, and can't trust her but still loves her, you know, especially trust in somebody that you love. You know, you hear about it in, in kids who are abused as children, right? The people they trust the most, their parents or whoever, and there's abuse there. It's a horrible thing. And it's the same with, somebody you love that betrays your trust. It's really, once trust is gone, trust is a very hard thing to get from somebody that they trust you, but it's very easy to take away because just one little lie or one thing that you do wrong, it's hard. Now, I heard a very interesting, I think it was just on some random like murder mystery or something, but I heard a very interesting take on somebody who was cheating. A daughter was mad at the mother, like how can you stay with dad? He cheated on you. How can you still stay with him? And she said something like, I choose to love him for the thousands of great things that he did, not the one mistake that he made. And I just thought that's such a great, cheating is the thing that most people, if you cheat, doesn't matter how long you've been together, you cheat once, you're done, you're gone. But I thought that was a really interesting way to do it, especially if it was like a thing that was, a mistake and the person feels sorry. I thought that was just a really great way to look at it. But the way she's describing it, it really seems to be like it's this thing that just keeps going on. Thought the love of his life ended up being a nightmare instead, on the verge of taking his life. It was so heartfelt. It's a tough thing to deal with, So she wrote it beautifully, and I learned a new word from Aphasiana tonight. I'm supposed to be a great I'm supposed to be a poet hosting a radio show, and I didn't know what this was called. I thought it was called Beautiful Diamond Shape. She told me what it was really called, so thanks for that, Aphasiana.
I sort of cheated because she says it in the author note.
Oh, okay, there you go. You didn't have to say that. Nobody would have known, but I appreciate that. Yeah, I appreciate your honesty, right? You're being very honest there, so there you go. I can still trust you, so we still have our trust.
Right. This next poem is Double Scotch by Guilty. I'd like to smell your perfume from time to time as a reminder I am a living human being. Not an idea, someone's romantic notion, on agenda, a working stiff, paycheck to paycheck, failed writer, habitual liar, solidarity is a few $1,000 for $1 million. I'd whore the American dream. But the softness of your kiss melts away misery. Idyllic scenery in green grass, the rising sun over Manhattan, and the city lulled to sleep. You'd bring me there before the kick in the teeth. Your boyfriends found out we'd both been played. blood thickens, the heart pumps, the wetness of your pussy, the height of your red pumps. God, I'd give it all up for you. And almost did. Winding road, watering hole, a good jukebox, a random score. Forget sobriety. I need you more. The living means another sunrise. The liquor stays on the shelf. A bitter reminder to the road to paradise, made on the bones of broken souls in hell. End poem.
Wow, that was a great read and very, very serious, deep poem. I just want to read about Guilty's. I really like Guilty's description of himself. My story is short. I was born, I am living, and I hope to die at the ripe age of 105. Well, go more than that, man. I'm going for 111. I want to be like Frodo and celebrate my 111th birthday. But I'm telling you, that's the way to live right there. Just live. So I really like this description. Anyway, his poem is interesting. It's almost about the addiction of this woman who takes, you know, everything. It's, you know, the softness of your kiss melts away misery, idyllic scenery in green grass. But then the kick in the teeth, your boyfriend's found out, we both had played. Give it up all for you. I almost did. Winding road, rotting hole. So this person who is just in lust or love or whatever with them and being played, being taken, you know, and almost gave up everything, almost gave up, you know, forget sobriety, I need you more. Like, it's very interesting. This is one I'm going to have to read again. And the last line was the most amazing, I think. Made on the bones of broken souls in hell. So at the, you know, I was trying to figure out this woman almost the whole time he was saying this. And at that end, it makes it feel like she's just this demon, this devil that really used him and seduced him. And he realizes just what, you know, what he gave up, that maybe that he really hurt these other men that she was with for his own pleasure, his own happiness, and he kind of realized maybe how he was taken by her. So really interesting, and very, very, very deep and guttural. Like I could feel this person the way he wrote it. So excellent, excellent. And he did a great Rita Faziana, even just staying kind of crisp and clear when the adult section of it came up in the middle there. You didn't miss a beat at all.
I did a little bit.
Oh, okay.
My late night show, I'm allowed to say it. This is the earlier show, so I kind of went, oops.
Yeah. Oh, what'd you think?
Sorry. I really liked it, actually. I like how it talks in the first stanza about needing a reminder of being alive. You know, feeling like you're just like an automaton working and trying to make money and doing whatever, and then wanting to kind of linger on those thoughts of this person who made you feel alive. Because sometimes, even if you're not with them, just thinking about someone who kind of makes your heart race, makes you realize that you're not just this, like, you know, pure working robotic kind of being. Sometimes people make you feel really alive, and just remembering this woman makes I think him feel that way. And then the contrast between like the softness of the kiss and the rising sun of Manhattan, and there's this gentleness to it, and then there's the kick in the teeth, the way that it says that is really a good description of, like, finding out that there's this double life that It looks like there are multiple boyfriends. Your boyfriends, with an S, found out. So there's you know, a lot of infidelity happening there, not just a one-off case. And that would, you know, feel like a kick in the teeth. So it goes from gentle to abruptly not so. And the contrast there, I think, is really important, because when you feel strongly, you feel strongly in both directions. And then when it's talking about forget sobriety and you need to do more, I think that works in two levels. So on the one hand, she was probably a bad influence where literally he was drinking this, you know, double shot of scotch. But also he was addicted to her, to the life with her, to the chemistry that they had. And even if he knew that she was bad for him, there was that temptation. But then it decides, actually, the liquor is going to stay on the shelf because that's what you need to do to stay alive. And the liquor, as in the actual liquor, but also the liquor as in this woman who was temptation. She was the double scotch. And I think that really fits the prompt of, you know, you need to think about them sometimes and remember the good parts, but you also have to know that as fondly as you may remember them, there's consequences, and you can't let yourself have that. So I thought Guilty really did an amazing job of putting this together.
Absolutely. And I apologize, I might have just been typing and I didn't mean to do that. I double, triple muted and was out, so I apologize. I caught myself this time, Tiziana, so I caught myself.
That's good. I didn't have to call you out.
I appreciate that. All right, I'm guessing it is my turn for Bill.
It is.
Bill made an interesting comment on the board earlier. He said, "Hi, gang. Another night beckons, a bright moon glowing in my backyard. Best time to dance naked under cover of juniper bushes. Daniel Deschino once told me." I have no idea. I might have written that. I have no idea what Bill means, but I appreciate the comment, Bill. I have a feeling that's a poem I wrote that I can't remember writing.
It's probably me.
Oh, okay.
It sounds like something I would do.
Bill wrote that today, which I really appreciate the comment. I love Bill to pieces. His poetry is amazing, but I don't think that. Which, you know, I don't remember what I had for breakfast this morning, so could be. Anyway, Bill, the amazing poet that he is, wrote on second thought. "Love is like a roller coaster. Our romance was the car rolling off track. As a baby thrives after smack, your hands whacked me awoke from sleep. When I was looking for a shepherd, you were searching for us sheep." So ba 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 and blah blah blah. You've heard the words before they tell. All at once I felt and more. Dawned with you like dog running out open door. The kind eyes in which I gazed have chilled. Now I only see crazed glare of betrayal. The welcome wagon has fallen off wheels. Your shoes, your pictures, the notes I kept sealed and spill of thoughts. Our dreams were sickened by schemes. No treasure where wicked X marks spot. In drunken wastes of time, I slip as memory. Reminders of a tender kiss. When I consider what I miss before I'll ever taste again, I bite my lips." End poem.
Great read, Dan. This is less meticulously edited than I would normally expect from Bill. There's some spacing that's unusual and a couple little typos, but I kind of wonder if that's on purpose in this one, because it's someone who's upset about things going off track. And because it talks about, where is it now, drunken waste of time, like maybe that's supposed to be the state of mind that the narrator is in. Some of the capitalization I'm curious about, because kept in I kept sealed in is capitalized in an unusual spot. And the kind eyes in which I gazed, the kind is caps lock. Entire words there are capitalized. And not the ones, it's not the spot that I would think of. So I think it's really emphasizing, like, there was kindness, and that's gone now. It used to be, like, the thing. And that was what he tried to keep sealed, but it just didn't work out. I liked the line, our dreams were sickened by schemes, because there's the internal rhyme of dreams and schemes. There's the alliteration of sickened and schemes. And I just love the word schemes. So, you know, just put that anywhere and I like it. where is it now? A line that kind of took me off guard was, as a baby thrives after smack. So that kind of makes me think of a child who was born addicted because the mother was on drugs when she was pregnant. But it just seemed like an unusual analogy, as a baby thrives after smack, which is, you know, saying quite a bit, because it's difficult for a baby to thrive after that. Generally, those babies really struggle. It just, that line really took me off guard and then didn't really go back to something related to that. So I think it's just like being with this person who he was in love with was like being high on smack and then now having to thrive after that addiction. And that's quite the roller coaster, which is how he begins it. And then looking for a shepherd, you know, sometimes you want someone who's going to take the lead and guide you. And then when it says you were searching for a sleep, I'm kind of wondering, were they searching for a sheep to match the shepherd? Or was it about just wanting a sleep, like just wanting a one-night stand kind of thing? But I think it should have been sheep, because the next line is ba 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 and blah blah blah, and those two sounds going together in one line is kind of fun. Some good onomatopoeia, because words that start with a B work really nicely for sound effect type noises, and they're just so similar, just the L difference in there. What did you think, Dan?
I agree with you, and I pronounced you were searching for, I said sheep, I kind of automatically said that, and I regret saying it, because I do believe that he put these, this is, you know, the genius of Bill, where he made this like a drunk person, right? And you kind of think about that, you know, the what we've been talking about with the relationship, so you get drunk, like you're going through hell, so you get drunk, and now here's the thoughts you're thinking of, or you're writing a letter or whatever, and you're really not talking normal. So I think it's meant to say the words sheep, but he wrote sleep because that's how this person would have written it. And so all the little mistakes, because there's almost too many of them to not see, right? He's got reminders of together as a word. He's got some lowercase I's. There's just space is weird. And so I think that's what this is, I think, which is just brilliant that he's writing it almost like a drunk person would write that is drunk because they're up, they're so upset they need to get some relief a little bit. I actually took Baby Thrives After Smack as actual, like, getting smacked, you know, getting hit in the butt, like a baby gets smacked on the butt type of thing. Your hands whacked me woke from sleep. So, like, you know, smack a baby in the butt and he cries, and then 10 minutes later he's sleeping, you know. So Our Love Is a Roller Coaster, Our Romance, but then you basically smacked me awake with whatever she did. You know, I was looking for a shepherd. You were searching for sheep. So he got used by this person. And again, then I feel like he just did a brilliant way of just portraying like a drunk person, but kind of not making sense, but making sense at the same time. You know, having meaning there, but being a little nonsensical and slurring words type of thing. It was really, because in a drunken's waste of time, I slip his memory. So he's saying right here, he's drunk, right? So that was really, really interesting. And I apologize, Bill, for not saying the mistakes. Like at the end, I actually said bite my lips, and it was bite my lups. I just naturally kind of filled in the blanks. But anybody who's listening right now should read it. It's called On Second Thought. You can get much more visual of it. Is really, really well done. So awesome, Bill. That was really interesting in a beautiful, unique way. I haven't seen somebody do this with a poem before, so really great. And Jenny the Deep is joined us on board. So hey, Jen. Oh, and Uncle Ernie is on too. Hey, Uncle. And yeah, that's all I get to say. Hopefully you're not like the Uncle Ernie in the Who songs there, but that's okay. So
all right.
Anybody knows that reference? So what do we got now?
Now we have a poem by Little 20, and it's called Some People React Differently. Your treatment of me left me breathless, to say the least. Some people have loved me and not stayed with me. Some people have not heeded the strong feelings I have for them. Don't settle for just a meager feeling when you are waiting for the true prince of your dreams or princess come, and let the stars listen to your heart. It will tell you, please don't rush it. Your heart will fill you with love if you feel it as much as the love from which is always secure. End poem.
Excellent read of A Little Brevity from Little 20. So some people have loved me and not stayed with me. Some people have not heeded the strong feelings I have for them. Don't settle. I think this is, I think the way he or she wrote this was a beautiful way of writing and saying what I actually think is the truth. Is, you know, love will come. You can't find it, and you do have to wait for it sometimes. I always tell my son that the best thing to, if you're looking for a mate is a partner, it's compatibility, you know, and love will come. You don't want to love the person. You don't want it to be just a friend, but, you know, it will come. It will be there. It doesn't have to be this magical thing, and it's usually never is, because you don't really know until you discover the person. You might, you know, be head over heels from the person from the moment you meet them, but you don't really know until you know a person, right? Until you actually kind of really get to know them and see who they are and see if that's the person for you. So it's and, you know, I really like the line again, some people have loved me and not stayed with me. And what Little 20 writes is about herself is, I have cerebral palsy and depression. My fiance has schizophrenia and mental illness and bipolar. We're both writers and dabble in poetry. So you can kind of see, you know, maybe she has some issues, and maybe people just don't want to stay with that, whereas they both have issues, so they appreciate that. And, you know, that, I think it is true. I think if you really are, you know, that's the person for you, it really doesn't matter their faults, whether it is, you know, a huge, you know, disability or it's just basic faults, that's still part of the person, and that's the, and you accept them. And I think all of that's in this little brevity by Little 20. So, excellent job. I thought it was really, really interesting. Daisy, what did you think when you were reading it?
I think that opening line could go two different ways. So, your treatment of me left me breathless, to say the least. I mean, it could be breathless, like, in a good way, swept off your feet. But it could also be breathless as in, like, wow, that was awful. Because, like, the quote's talking about, you know, thinking of you in a good way, but also never letting myself go near you again. So this could be either way in terms of the treatment. Because then it talks about, you know, the negative experience of someone who doesn't stay, even though there was love. And some people who did not appreciate the love given. I like the word heated. I like that that was in there. And then it talks about not settling, and I think that's good advice, not to settle. I mean, Prince Charming might be a little unrealistic, but, you know, don't be with someone who doesn't treat you well or who you don't have real feelings for. So I think that's good advice of don't settle and don't rush. You know, there's so much pressure for some people of like, oh, well, I'm this old, so I should be married. I should have the things. Don't rush. Wait until you really feel it. I think that there's some good wisdom in this little brevity.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, you don't, I understand people don't, you know, some people don't want to be alone and they're like, oh, I got to, but, you know, is it really better to be with somebody that's not really compatible, doesn't really care that much for you just to have a person? Because then you don't really have them, you know, you don't really have that connection. So, yeah, you should find the person that is there for you. I agree. All right, words of wisdom tonight on.
Next we have one by Gornwee.
Okay. That's my turn again. So, well, there's only two of us. I can keep track really easy. As soon as you have the third person, I can't. I can only count to two. I can't count to three. All right. This is called an inkwell game. Weaving paper mache in my brain at night, melding what I want into written shapes, making molds of words in pen and ink, shining light into dark thoughts of what I am. Chased by rats in the alleyways of black lines, hidden in shadows, bloody and composed, gnawing at my words, the marrow of my life, scribbling rhythms to a beating drum, opening my veins in a communion of sin, drinking my hypocrisy of poetry and pen, in a prism of fractured, splintered light, found shining at a poet's rainbow's end, writing graffiti names of recall on walls as a self-acclaimed eagle spelling poetry, a red wine bohemian in an empty bar, finding no one's reading this printed page. Bound and wished for books of dreams, a literary ghost left in a poet's glass, hiding myself in secondhand thoughts. I write, therefore I prove what I am. Leaving footprints made by feet of clay, ignoring signposts to write the other way. On paths of lost direction to emptiness, I throw away the inkwell and pen and poem.
I forgot to say that we are now on to prompt two. So I'm going to read the prompt before I comment. And the prompt was, why am I trying to become what I don't want to be when all I want is out there waiting for me the minute I say I know who I am? Which is from the play Death of a Salesman. Again, Arthur Miller is the playwright. So I think this really works well with that prompt, and it didn't go with the first prompt, so I was like, wait a minute, I forgot to say we're switching prompts. So yes, it was not he who was confused, but I find it interesting to think of papier-mâché as weaving, but it really, you know, it is the way that you have to put the layers on there. I like that idea of, you know, building your brain, putting yourself together, all of those, making molds of words, because usually when you're making papier-mâché, you do use newspapers. And so you're gluing together a whole bunch of words to make your own shape. That's a really creative image and way of conquering that thought process. I like that. And then gnawing at my words, the marrow of my life. That's a very strong line. Where is it? Finding no one's reading his printed page. I mean, this is the hard thing about being a writer. It's hard to be at a point where people are appreciating what you write. I think it's a little bit easier for us in the digital age because we can put it out there. You know, on this website, All Poetry, I actually have people who follow me, which is, you know, quite shocking to me. I imagine that if I was only writing physically and not digitally, that I wouldn't really have an audience. It would be very difficult to get out there. And even with, you know, online methods, you only get so popular unless you're really good. But it's deceptive, you know, if I'm like, oh, only 300 people read that. But think about it, like, for 300 people to be reading it, like, holding my book, that would be really exciting. I'd be like, wow, look at all these people. So you got to hold it in perspective. And it can feel like no one's reading his printed page. But I bet it's not as bad as he perceives. It's just that insecurity. I liked a literary ghost left in poet's glass. There's that hope for what you wanted to write, for what you hoped would come of your writing, and it's sitting there in the glass, and he's kind of drinking away those ambitions and trying to let go of that. The way that's portrayed is really good. Ignoring signposts to write the other way. You know, not to go the other way, but to write the other way. But I like that he's ignoring signposts because the signposts are, you know, what would make you the most money? What would appeal to the audience who would make you popular? But ignoring those signposts, going the other way, is, you know, staying true to your work, to your own voice. But then here he is throwing away the inkwell and pen, frustrated that it's not quite working out. This is a powerful piece. I mean, I think that us writers appreciate it perhaps more than people who are not. You know, lost in the writing world, as most of us on All Poetry are, but I think that it's a great piece for writers to read. What did you think, Dan?
Yeah, absolutely. You stole my thunder as usual on this, which is a good thing. You know, we're on the same page, and so I won't talk a ton on this because you said everything I was going to say too, and I did like how in the first couple of stanzas he's talking about, you know, weaving and is it really called papier mâché? Because I always thought it was, I pronounce it maybe because I'm from Boston, paper mâché. So I'm probably pronouncing it incorrectly.
Well, originally French, so it's spelled like okay. Papier mâché, and usually it has accents when I've seen it. But I did go to French school, so maybe I just learned it the French way. I'm pretty sure in the U.S. you'd probably call it paper mâché, but papier mâché is the French version.
Ah, all right, yeah. If I said papier-mâché in Boston, I'd get beat up, so I can't say that. So chased by rats in alleyways of black lines, hidden in shadows, bloody and composed. Like, he's giving his soul, his life to this, and I think we all do that. You know, at this point now, I've been lucky enough to write, you know, hundreds of poems on here, and some of them are just, I feel so passionate and strongly about, right, and then nobody reads them. And, you know, I put a book out like all of you guys do, and I get, you know, few people buy it here and there, you know, and I promote the hell out of it. And you know, I have some people who give me great compliments, and I have people who actually say they're fans. They love looking for your next book, and that's great, but it's such a small, you know, like Faziano said. And you know, you feel like that. You know, you put your heart and soul into these things, and you can see it in people's poetry, but, you know, it not everybody can get there. You know, I'm a musician, and I've done the same thing. I put albums out. I've been spending, you know, a good portion of my life learning how to play drums and play, and I put my heart and soul when I go out there, and, you know, I'm a professional manager. I've never made it. And, you know, that happens to so many artists. And so I really... I think, like you were saying, like a lot of us, I think, can relate to this of putting your heart and soul in things, and then, you know, a few people kind of liking it, or maybe even not getting what you were saying, right? So you're putting yourself out there, and you know, I really like that metaphor of, you know, being, you know, writing graffiti in a bar, and then the drunken people in the bar are misinterpreting or not even seeing what you wrote there. So yeah, that was great. And Naomi's on the board. She's going to be calling in a few minutes, so I think that's fun. So we get the next one, and oh, you get to read Ben's. You lucky person, you.
I do. I love reading Ben. All right. So this is Little Things Left Unsaid by Ben Hart. 1. I wrote better when stardust burned in black divide, when the depth was true and not spared from us. But I wrote best when waiting for you, waiting for love. 2. Why am I here in a changing place, holding on to something lonely, as though it were all I owned, my debt to do it better, that to the dead I owed? 3. Good night. I've spent my things to say, to feel. So, until that other day, good night. End poem. And in the AN, it says, nothing much. If I only write you guys whole novels, you might just fall out of love. We've been teasing it because his poems are very, very long normally. This is shorter than usually what one of his little sections are. You don't have to worry, Ben. I don't think I will be falling out of love with your writing anytime soon. Can't get enough of your poems. Dan, would you like to comment?
Yes, and as a card-carrying member of the heterosexual club, I love you as well, too, Ben, so I'll put that out there as well. So, no, keep writing. I look forward to you. And Ben, I've been talking to Ben on social media, and he's been writing a lot of stuff personally. He's going to be publishing his work as well, too, so I'm very excited for that. I'm absolutely going to buy his work when he publishes it, so everybody should look for that. And I love this. I reading some of Ben's older stuff, he wrote shorter pieces, and I do like his shorter pieces. You know, he writes long pieces, but they're also compact, and each stanza usually has specific meanings to it. So I think the entire thing has a nice meaning here, because he's basically saying, you know, good night, I've spent my things to say, I'll see you another day, you know. But I wrote best when waiting for you, waiting for love. Why am I here in a changing place, holding on? You know, he's almost just kind of done with the day, and he's, you know, waiting for his love, and he's just going to go to sleep now. He has nothing else to say except just that he wants to, you know, that he's just waiting for the next stuff for his love, right? But I wrote best when waiting for you, waiting for love. And, you know, it could be that he wrote best when waiting for this, so he's not waiting anymore. He's there. The person's there, which is why he's not going to write. He's not waiting for love anymore. He's, you know, they're there. So it was very interesting. But I wrote better when stardust burned in black divide. I really love that statement, and that's to me, it's almost like when in the nothingness, in the ether. So he's saying when there was nothing, when there wasn't anything, when he was alone, right? So the stardust burned in the black divide, he's almost talking about like before there was anything, right? When there, you know, when there was the ethos, right? When the universe was just beginning. So there was nothing, there was no Nothing coalesced together. There was no collaboration. So that's a beautiful way of really saying that. Awesome, Ben. Love it. Keep writing. Write long, short, whatever you want to write. We'll read it for you. Daisy, your thoughts?
I think this has a deep melancholy to it. Holding on to something lonely as though it was all I owned. Holding on to that pain and loneliness, because sometimes at the end of a relationship or something negative, even though it hurts to think about, even though it's like the pain of a breakup or something like that, to not want to let go of that pain, because when the pain is gone, the person is truly gone. Even with grief of someone dying, sometimes you hold on to the pain of the grief a little bit longer, because if you're not hurting every day, it's like they're not a part of your life every day, and you just hold on past where you maybe had to hold on to the pain. And that's what I think of when it says holding on to something lonely as though it were all I owned, that clinging to something that has become a negative thing to hold on to, and not being able to let go of that. And then my debt to do it better, that to the dead I owed. That just sounds very ominous to me. Owing the dead. I wrote best when waiting for you, waiting for love, and I don't know, I kind of feel like the love was lost, or there's this fascination with death that's what's been waited for and now going in that direction. I've spent my things to say and to feel, and then it kind of feels like goodbye, and then until that other day, good night. And that's almost like a reincarnation type thing. It's like when life starts over again and things are different, that'll be new, but for now, good night. It feels like a scary goodbye to me. Like, Ben, you better be okay. I don't know. This scares me a little bit in that it feels like so painful, and yet it's tagged as hope. So I am hopefully misinterpreting the sadness of it, because it's tagged as both death and hope.
I saw Ben post on social media just yesterday, so I think he's okay. But yeah, Ben, I'm sure didn't write this just to do a short one. If I know Ben, he wrote it for a purpose, short for a reason. And I do think it is something like he's not that he's done with life, but that he's just kind of done with the waiting. You know, is what he's trying to show. But yeah, it is interesting. It is melancholy. There's some great sadness, but he does mark it as hope as well too. So it's interesting. I agree with you on that.
Okay. Well, thank you for saying that you saw him post. I tend to be a little bit pessimistic and a worrier, and if someone's been like offline for a few days, I'm like, oh, are they okay? I have a bit of a problem where I get attached to people.
Oh, really? You mean like when I was texting you for like days and you never wrote back? You mean like that?
Yes. I'm sorry. When I travel, I turn off my phone.
Oh, I'm just right. I'm just picking on you. It's okay.
Yeah.
Sounds like you had a blast. So please, last thing you need to worry about, just picking on you. I'm gonna text him on social media right now and say hi and tell him we love this poem. I'll tell you if he writes back.
Thank you. We are now on to a new prompt. This one is, fear, like love, is difficult to explain after it has subsided, probably because it draws away the veils of illusion as it disappears. Again, it's by Arthur Miller. And Our first entry is by Matt29. Dan, could you read that for us, please?
I can, absolutely. And he just posted 2 hours ago on Instagram. So.
Okay, so my paranoia comes aside.
Yes. He is over in the Netherlands, so Ben, you should not be up. You should be sleeping, so don't write back.
Stop waking
him up. You and the one. Yeah, go back to sleep, Ben. So Matt29, I apologize. Is the one we're doing?
Yes.
Did you say Matt29? Okay, I apologize. All right, this is called Love and Fear's Illusion. Feelings so intense I can barely hold them, like waves of a flapping butterfly trapped, flying around inside the jar wanting to escape. Torment and desire both clamoring around. Allowing them both to breathe brings peace, each wanting to strive and take hold. Love first unleashing its perfume of wanting, injecting the senses with notion of need, bringing the volcanic lava of humanity to bursting, erupting into feelings of ownership and downfall, experiencing hurt and pain when rejected, leading to pleas of promises and gestural appeasement. Fear now shines its light and a love lost and fighting to save it. How the adrenaline rushes and emotions become heightened. The mind a maze of thought patterns overcome with schemes. Ways to prevent love leaving and losing something so precious. Year, though once rooted, is not a visiting guest. Wanting to take control and have the joy of supremacy, knowing how much love's drive can be destructive. Fear takes the upper hand, driving a wedge forever. Now as sadness looms and love and fear both have dissipated, is there really so much difference between the two, both strong and determined to arouse the body to react, leaving no room for thought of recognized behavior? End poem.
I really like that ending. Both strong and determined to arouse the body to react. So, you know, when you're in love, definitely makes you feel alive and like, oh, I need to be with that person. I need to, you know, do whatever it takes to win them over. But also fear, you know, gets your heart going. You want to run probably away instead of to. And there's that, it does make you feel really alive. Both of them get that subconscious kind of, I am blanking on the term for it. It's like, it's a different mode of your brain when you're in that kind of fight or flight kind of mode. And love gets you there too, where it's just you're on automatic. You can't be reasonable and leaving no room for thought of recognized behavior. So you don't tend to be very rational when you're very afraid or when you're very in love. You make bad choices or you make sudden choices, and sometimes it's good, but you're not really consciously doing it. You're on autopilot, and that happens either way. So I like that relation to how they're such powerful feelings on kind of on opposite sides of the spectrum. Although sometimes you're afraid of how much you're in love. And some people love fear and the danger. So it can be connected, but both are really strong feelings. I liked the word choice of clamoring. Torment and desire both clamoring around. They're loud and they're, you know, not very straightforward. It's just kind of like all over the place. The pain and desire are both kind of big feelings as much as the fear is. Erupting into feelings of ownership. So that is kind of a danger of love, where you start to feel possessive. And when you feel ownership over someone because you love them, that can lead to pain, because, you know, if they're not yours, either because they don't reciprocate or just because you never truly own you know, your partner, at least I hope not, you know, not in a slave situation, but, like, you, they're their own people, and they're going to make choices that go away from what you like, and maybe they go beyond the boundaries of that relationship. So the feeling of ownership is definitely scary, especially if there is infidelity, and that becomes a downfall. So it's dangerous to love to that extent, and I think that he's touching on that here, that pain of being rejected, pleas and promises, that has the alliteration there, sounds good. And then it talks about adrenaline, which, again, I got over, I referenced in the later stanza. Yeah, I think this had some really good points, and it was well put together. What did you think, Dan?
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking the same thing at the end, so... Now, as sadness looms and love and fear have both dissipated, is there really so much difference between the two, both strong and determined to arouse? I'm going to get scientific here, I guess, but I've always said that we're chemistry is what we are. And over the years, I've dealt with a lot of people, everybody probably has, who are not necessarily in control of themselves. And a lot of it is chemistry. You know, I think that's what depression is. Depression is a lot of things, but it's a chemical reaction, and that's what we run by. So how hard it is that's why it's so hard to come out of depression, because it's so hard to think and to, you know, with yourself when yourself isn't thinking straight. And sadness looms as love and fear both dissipated, and that that was interesting to me because it's kind of like, you know, sad, a lot of times anxiety, that's the manic depressive, right? Anxiety is then countered by depression. And then love and fear can be that same kind of a high that then now goes to depression when you're down to the sadness, right, when you're on the next thing. So, you know, fear now shines its light in a love lost and fighting to save it, how the adrenaline rushes and the emotions become highlighted, the mind a maze of thought patterns. So you just not even able to think straight. You get so much going on, you get so much emotion, so much chemicals kind of flying around your body that you can't even think. So I thought he really explored that very well within this poem. So very, very interesting. Excellent, excellent job. And I have a feeling you're going to take us somewhere else. And, ooh, it's going to be all red, Jay. That right, that is funny.
You're right. This is by All Red Jay, and it's called I Will Be Brave. With no rehearsal, frozen frights, upon relationship's dark stage tonight, trepidation, chills, and tears, gotta lift myself above these fears. I'm in the concert, can't withdraw, theater echoes in startling awe. I'm much too small and so afraid, not seeking any accolade. Like a tightrope, this existence, without a net, without assistance, I'll take my deepest breath and sing, can brave with moxie anything. End poem.
Excellent, excellent. And, this is very interesting. With no rehearsal, frozen flight upon relationship's dark stage tonight, trepidation, it's... You know, bravery is an interesting thing. I've noticed it over the years that a lot of times you have to kind of just do things, you know, and I've got used to it. It's very easy to not do things. You know, for example, I'm a manager, I manage people, and I can easily overlook things. If I see somebody not doing what they're supposed to be doing, I can easily just not do it overlook it, because then I don't have to deal with it, you know. Unfortunately, as a manager, I have to terminate people, you know, fire them from the job, and discipline and things like that. It's not a fun part, but you have to do it. And if I don't have the strength, you know, the strength to do it, I can easily just go away from that. And that's the same thing with love, right? You know, so many people, I think, don't take those chances. It's like the scariest I've always heard that the scariest thing in the world is, people used to say it was speaking in public, right? I don't know. I know you're a Harry Potter fan, I believe, Faziana. There's a scene in there, and I'm not going to be able to quote it correctly, but I forget which movie it's on, but they're asking people to the prom, Ron and Harry in the movie. It's probably in the book, too. And so Ron says something like, Harry, you fought dragons. If you can't get a date, like, what are we going to do? And he's, like, petrified. He's fighting, he does all these things, and he is the most petrified dude you've ever seen him in any of the movies, wanting to ask this girl out, for whatever reason, that type of a thing, that type of rejection, it's terrifying to everybody, to everybody except the most egotistical maniacs of us. And I'm assuming that's what he's talking about is love, going by the quote. And so interesting to get that bravery, get that up there. I can do it. I can talk to this person. I can put myself out there, right? So yeah, interesting. I thought it was really, really well done. You know the scene I'm talking about in Harry Potter there, Faziana?
Yes, and I know the scene you're talking about. Getting ready for the Yule Ball.
Yep.
And they chose the wrong people, of course. I mean, like, come on, Ron. Hermione wanted to go. But
exactly. Well, yeah, but he was scared to death. They knew they liked each other, but he was so scared to ask, he couldn't, he was petrified to ask her, so he asked this other, person that mm-hmm. you could care less about. So there you go. They finally got together. Enough.
She could do better.
Wow, there we go. Okay, now it's out there. Now it's out there. Poor Ron.
No, he just doesn't treat her very good. All right, anyway. Back to the poem. I think that you're right that when it's talking about that kind of stage fright, it's talking about putting yourself out there for the potential of love. And that feels scarier than anything else. And, maybe this writer or this narrator is someone who would perform on stage. And it just kind of has that feel of like there's someone who understands that. And it's one thing to be too afraid to get it started, but then once you're in that concert, you're on that stage, you got to go for it. And it seems like they've gotten to the point with the person who they're interested in where, it's their moment. They have to speak up or do something and kind of like pep talk themselves above the fear and feeling so small and just like not good enough. I think is a natural reaction, unless, like you said, they're total egomaniac. I like the metaphor of the tightrope, feeling like you have no safety net. There's nothing holding you up that you could fall at any moment. But pushing through it anyway. And moxie. I like the use of moxie there. This is a really nice brevity.
Absolutely. All right. Where is our life going now?
Now there's one by A.R. Mundell, Phantoms of the Mind.
And is that my turn?
It is.
I see there's two of us, and I already lost track. It's, it's a sad state of affairs. All right, this is by Amy called Phantoms of the Mind. In the moment, fear is alive. It is a tangible, heavy force. It is the beast which stalks your walk, the liquid filling your lungs, the puppet strings which bind you, the claws which clutch your heart, the whistle in the dark, the despair etched in your bones, the fingers rifling through your brain, the shadow blotting out your sight, the air pressing you down, the ground which swallows your feet, the heartbeat drum which counts you down, the wolves which howl for blood, The change which holds you paralyzed, the hand upon your throat. Then the moment passes, the fear dies, and you realize it was always dead. End poem.
Oh, that was a fantastic read, and I really enjoyed this poem. It has such great references. Like, it talks about fear as being tangible, and these are really tangible examples. The puppet strings that bind you is a fun example, but the fingers rifling through your brain, I can feel that when you're like trying to look through your thoughts. The shadow blotting out your sight, like when you're about to faint and you just like you get that dark spots that come on. Okay, people probably don't faint as much as I do, but I know what it's talking about there. The air pressing you down. There's this certain feeling of like when gravity seems to like take over when you're having a panic attack. I know that feeling too. The ground swallowing your feet. The heartbeat drum. I forget the word for it. I just learned it like a couple weeks ago. There's a word for when you hear your heart in your ear, which always really freaks me out. And then I'm like, yeah. Oh no, is that faster than my heart should be? Is that slower than my heart should be? And then I start panicking about that, and it just makes it so much worse.
the pulsatile tinnitus.
Yeah, there you go. It's unpleasant. It really freaks me out. And then the thing is, I wish that it stops, and then when it does, I'm like, did my heart stop beating? which is a very stupid thought to think. But as soon as it stops, when it's been happening, I'm like, oh, no.
Yes, because you're thinking, did my heart stop beating? Then your heart's beating because you're thinking about it. So there you go.
Exactly. Yeah. but am I logical? No, I'm not. and then the end, the fear dies and you realize it was always dead. The fear was never really alive. It was just your own perception of things. I think this is a really clever piece that I relate to a lot, but maybe because I have anxiety problems. So thank you for this, Amy.
Yeah, it was really great. It was interesting. I like Amy, I see her do kind of different things a lot, which is great. You love to see people kind of, you know, diverge off the norm. And I do like this listing, and it does remind me of anxiety. You know, fear is an interesting thing. The part that fear plays in our lives is very, very interesting. And it is true. It's just a fear. It's a fake thing. A lot of times when you're anxious and you're overly freaking out, it's not real. You know, it's not that dire a situation. I've talked about this before. I mean, I've had so many different panic attacks in my life, and 98% of them, I can't remember what they were. And I'm still standing here right now, and everything's fine. You know, so what was I worried about? Because, you know, everything's here. And all these different ways, and there is so many different ways that things can be fearful. So I took this as, you know, the moment fear is alive, it's tangible, heavy, and it can either be multiple different things. So you can be you can have anxiety about so many different things, but also it can be everything, right? I liked how she described all these different ways, because that's what can happen. All of a sudden, you're panicking about everything, you know? And that's happened to me. I'm sitting there, and I'm so panicky. I, like, drop a fork on the thing, and I walk out, and I trip over here because I'm just not – everything all of a sudden is, like, chaos. And, you know, and so I liked all the different interesting ways that she talked about it. So it was both compositionally really interesting and philosophically as well, too. Excellent job, Amy. Alrighty, what is our fate now?
Well, that was the last of my contest. So now we're on to your contest that has the pictures of birds. Do you want to talk about that?
Okay. I do, yeah. I thought these were really interesting. These are all pictures that I just took around my house as I was walking around. And I realized, I don't think anybody else gets the first one. But I love this one. I actually put it in my book, Conscious Energy. Everybody wants to buy it since we were talking about fame. And it's just a very simple picture. It's just blue and black. It's just a straight line of a wire with a silhouette of a bird that's the same color as it. And I just thought it was very surreal and interesting to see this kind of ancient creature sitting on those wires when you see them doing that. And the interesting thing you'll see with a lot of the poems is, you know, for Double Helix, we always try to have people, you know, talk introspectively and about themselves and so forth. And that's what I was posing this as. But you, a lot of the poems I found were very just, watching and observing. And what I realized when I was reading the poems is that is the introspection that birds do. I never really realized it before, but whenever I hear birds or look at birds, it's always meditative. It's always very, very peaceful. It's almost like it kind of takes me right from the rest of the world, and I don't think about it. I just listen to them or I just watch them fly over, and it kind of is that moment of just taking you away where you get to kind of watch this miracle thing go by, and that's the introspection of the observational type things that we read. So I thought it was interesting. Yeah, the first prompt is just this little silhouette of a bird on a wire that I thought was interesting compositionally. And what's the first poem we have for that prompt?
We have one by Gerald Green, and actually we have an audio from him, so I'm going to grab that.
Excellent.
Also, hello, kind poet.
Oh, there you go. You
beat me.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's okay. Ladies first. Yeah, kind poet is there. And go ahead.
Contented, written and read by Gerald Green. He sat upon the taut utility line, that new wire bordering the field, content with tummy full of worms, ready for cool evening breezes, ending a hot June day. His work had been vigorous, hour after hour, pulling up small plants of corn, looking for what lay underneath. Steadily rewards accumulated throughout the day. The field was all his. No other passenger pigeon competed for his morsels, making him all the more content. No sound of noisy guns was heard. Nothing but silence accompanied his tireless labor. Last year, this field was a busy place. This year, a paradise where interruptions were rare. But how was he to know that he was the last, the only passenger pigeon left alive? End poem.
Ooh, that ending is intense. How ominous is that? It's like he's the only one, so now he's completely alone. He will not find friends or a mate. You know, sometimes it's nice to have your day away from everyone, but do you want it to be every day? Oh, that was a twist ending, to think of it as like, this is nice. And then, oh, not so much. Everyone's gone. Be careful what you wish for. Chills. I like the word choices here too. Like, competed for his morsels, the rewards accumulated, his work had been vigorous, and just that ending really strikes me.
Yeah,
oh, wow.
Yeah, he did a beautiful job where I didn't expect that.
No, you know, he sounds so calm, and then at the end it's just like, and everyone else was dead. It reminds me, who was it? I think it was Victoria had a contest a year or two ago where it was an audio of a bird in Hawaii, and it was the last of its kind, and it was doing the mating call, and it gets sadder and sadder because nobody's answering, and there are no more birds for that bird to mate with. It was the last bird of that species. And it was so sad. I remember, like, bawling my eyes out for that contest because everyone was writing about, like, this last bird. And it was recording of, like, this is probably the last time anyone's going to hear this mating call. So this poem reminds me of that, and I'm just like, oh, that poor bird in Hawaii. Yeah, Gerald, you made me sad. But great, good poem. What did you think, Dan?
It reminded me of the, I don't know if anyone's going to get this reference, but the original Twilight Zone. It was a very famous one where all this guy wanted to do was read. And everybody was bugging him. He couldn't read. He couldn't do anything. And then all of a sudden there was a nuclear holocaust, and he happened to be in this, like, in this vault, so he survived. And he came up, and everyone was gone. So it was just him in the world. And so he just read all the time now, and then he broke his glasses, and he couldn't see anymore, and that was the – so I don't know why, but it reminded me of that one. What Gerald said, so Gerald wrote me about this instead, and he did get the gold for this, by the way. He said, I did some research last year and learned that passenger pigeons destroyed the corn crop in Kentucky in 1797, pulling out the young plants. So that's what he decided to write about. And this is what I meant, that a lot of people are just, you know, when they see birds, when they see things, they just, it, you know, stories come up, this kind of just melancholy of just observing and kind of wondering. You know, it doesn't get as much introspective. I never noticed it before until this contest, that it kind of takes, when I look at birds too, it just kind of takes me away. And I thought he did just a beautiful job with that. Like I said, that a lot of times when you read these poems, you can kind of see things coming, and I really didn't see that. And then when I go back, it all makes sense, which is, I think, the sign of a great writer, where you know, things are making sense along the way, but then you almost trick the writer into the surprise, but then it all makes sense. You know, no noisy gun was heard, no silence accompanied. So maybe the farmers did destroy all the passenger pigeons for actually destroying the corn crop, right? And they weren't doing it anymore because there was only one left. So he got to kind of eat as much corn as he wanted, but that would be the end of him afterwards. So, yeah, it was beautifully done, and I thought the audio was great. So awesome job, and well-deserved gold.
Kind poet commented on the board, the pigeon is oblivious to his solitude, much like many humans are today.
That is true.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
A sad truth. Our next poem to the same prompt is by Keith M. Drew, and it's called All Evolution. The dinosaurs, they took flight. That tragic day, that tragic night, to fly above the carnage made, a meteorite, the earth was laid. Today we do not fear them, then. They'll never walk the earth again. Above in thousands in the sky, all evolution tells you why. End poem.
Excellent job. He's got a picture of a... it might be an Archaeopteryx. I don't know why I'm thinking that, but I'm probably totally wrong. But Keith, tell us what that picture is. So he's got a picture of a, and you know, that is the, I think the common still theory is that the dinosaurs that survived the meteor that came down turned into birds. That's where they kind of came from, and that's so the ancestors of the little birds that we see flying around here today. You know, that developed the hollow bones and so forth and could fly. and this is a beautifully rhymed poem, and he did a great read, Paphasiana. Above thousands of the vi, all evolution tells you why. So, you know, he kind of, you know, put that all together, put the evolution aspect of it. It was a fun little brevity, really interesting. So great job. Keith, I enjoyed it. It was fun.
I did a reverse image search on that, and it came up with an article from the Australian Museum. And there are a few different options of what it could have been, and I can't say any of them. It's like, Cadopatrix zui, Sinosauropteryx Prima, Sinorithnosaur Millenni. I'm totally saying them wrong. They were all in China.
Okay. Can't they name these things like Fred or George or something? Why do they have to have these giant long names? I don't know. Nobody can pronounce it. You know. And this one,
syllable has meaning. It's like from this place, it has this kind of bone. There's purpose to all of the name. I just can't say it.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, yeah, whatever. I'm sure there is.
The wings are very pretty.
Yes.
I liked the rhyme of this. It had, like, a simple, gentle feel, even though it's talking about, like, how so many of them died. But it makes sense that the ones that could fly would be the ones who were able to get away when there was, you know, destruction on the land. Although meteors, you know, coming from the sky would still get some of the ones who were flying. This is an interesting interpretation. And it works with what your title of your contest was, The Ancients Among Us. So it may not be specifically about the bird in your picture, but it makes sense with your kind of reference to the evolution.
Absolutely. And a kind poet said, legends in the Congo describe modern-day dinosaurs. So, yeah, I mean, alligators and crocodiles are basically dinosaurs. They live in Florida, so there are ancient creatures around.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. Now what would you like to do?
Now we have one by Springsky39, and I believe it's your turn to read.
I believe it is. All right, let's do it. This is called Morning Dove Coos. Morning dove, I hear you peacefully coo, and I look forward to the day started too. You soon in the field after rain showers, pecking in the ground in your tall sunflowers. Gentle dove, you mean much, much more to me. You a September joy in your flock flying, then perched on long electric high wires. You play your place and until I wonder if you're tired. Oftentimes I hear you whistle as you go to your nest there on the little fence row. The little mesquite tree where you all light for afternoon coos until gone the light. Oh.
I really like afternoon coos. It's just sort of like having afternoon tea or, you know, just like the happy hour. We're just going to have our afternoon coos and just kind of talk to ourselves. Just something about that is so sweet. An afternoon coos. Because, you know, there's times of being in the flock flying, and then there's other times of just, you know, perching out there by yourself. There's nice balance. The pecking the ground near the sunflower. I was reading this picture book at story time to the kids today, and it was like kind of like a color thing where it's like, what color is this? What color is that? And so there were some beans and seeds on the ground in this one picture. And I was like, what color are these? And the kids were like, white. I was like, and who wants to eat them? Because there was pictures of chickens who were eating it. And this one kid goes, nobody! Beans are yucky! And I was just like, okay, but who in the picture is eating them? And she was like, yuck! Okay. I'm like, the answer was chickens. I don't know, for some reason that line just made me think about it. The pecking the ground. I'm like, nobody. I like this. It has like kind of a gentle rhyme, and it's very real and down to earth. I just feel really happy about those afternoon coos. What did you think?
Yes, you liked. I like the afternoon coos as well too, and that is what I liked about this was, I think about that sometimes. I have a cat, and the cat just sits there and purrs, not trying to talk to anybody. It's just happiness, you know. And you usually do hear birds. Like, I'll hear birds in my yard, and one will talk, and then the other one will talk. But you do hear, though, the morning doves just, I can't make a morning dove sound, but they'll just sit there and coo, and you wonder, are they just, is it like purring, you know, are they just singing, are they just making noises? And sometimes you hear that. I think most of the time birds are calling, or they have a purpose, but maybe they don't. Maybe they're just content and just, you know, making some noises and singing. You would love to hear that, and seeing the bird and thinking that and feeling that peace when you see them, I thought was beautifully done by Spring Sky. I like the peaceful coo, and after, I like anything with the word coo in it. That's a great word, COOE. You can't not like that word. So excellent, and we shall move on to who next.
All right, so we have another one by Ben Hart, this time for your contest. And it wasn't written to a specific prompt. It's kind of like a mix of the prompts, as he does. This is called Man is a Bird, Ancients Among Us, Dream Eater by Ben Hart. 1. Hunger. Fall. What cannot blacken sky? With hasted evasion, hunter has come to expect from good prey, good kind prey, a chase and a cessation. The kiss of comprehension, the chaos of creation, explained in upriver running into ancestral eyes. And the art of the fall? Some say God sees us then, in our most honest form. Birds untrapped by flight, what a beautiful thing it must be to see. Man unmoored, and true test of their hearts, the craters they will lay when they remain something that cannot seed, and therefore may just kill us all, or if they will perish on roads the hunter knows, where it leads them, where all this running goes, because hunter is coming, and it's dark in his wake, and it's still so far to where it's safe for good prey, good kind prey, that couldn't comprehend the game of survival therein, that every Eden, every temperance lies between his teeth. 2. Beware. Poets at work here. Where's he been? It's been 3 weeks, hasn't posted anything. Hey, Ben, I thought you said you were at war, kid, but now it's awfully quiet. Well, what happened? Failed again. I thought you said you were done lying. I thought you said you were a fighter. I thought you said you were done hiding. I thought you said you were a writer, that you could see what the future is, that you'd be blessing bullets, not biting them. You're so full of it, Ben. You're no eagle. You're just a weak little wren. Well, hello there. They told me they couldn't handle it. They called me Icarus. They begged to be spared, and I took offense to that. So I had to take my business elsewhere, show these people I'm not just some fucking prodigy. No, they will build monuments for me, because every time I stepped into this arena, I gave everything. And no, I am not a fighter. I am a pugilist with a pen. And that's twice now that you asked me to tone it down, and I doubled the effort. Tell me, dear pretenders, does it unsettle you yet? Or do I have to do it again? Because you may think I've been away, but I stayed working. And remember, chances don't often come in thirds. I already leave them bleeding with every word. Let's not make them worse. Let's not make that worse. 3. Dream Eater, Saving Grace. What is your favorite time of year? Summers, those I liked, when the birds sang sun to sleep and sing again to welcome its waking, where the mists on the fields would sneak and lay at our restless heads our dew dreams, and the skies became a theater, boundless and bleak, that left even Frisian Vikings like you and me lost and meek. And every avian laments, I could have sworn it was the Valkyries. I see I was wrong to ask that a man of the moment, that to a man of the moment. But really, you die twice a day. It's unkind to read between the lines. Is that why you cannot stop writing, trying to muddle the truth to the point of no comprehension? No, I cannot stop writing, because without it, I am defenseless. Without it, I fear I will take to the stage. Isn't it a saving grace, then? What, dear? They'll all sing for you that day as you go under with the sun? No heroes go unsung. Something like that. 4. Dream Eater. Airy. I wonder, when music's imitation of silence unearths thought from where it had been buried, but never laid to rest, does it hurt more when we choose flight then, spared ourselves the bruises we'd grown from, for a seat on the throne of anxiety's kingdom? Does it hurt more when we change our minds and with less strength than when we had then, still put up a fight? I think thought should not be bound to the temple it came to looking for wisdom. I think thought should be birds, murders, flocks, parliaments, mischiefs, Aries, blushes, and casts. You should let them out of their cage and see where their haste takes them. Forget all that flies out. Moor not your heart with them. Do not tether them. Do not wait. Otherwise, they will never come back, like breathing in and out. You're saying thoughts should be thoughtless, like a dream? No. I am saying thoughts soar and warm our temples with songs of what they've seen. End poem.
Excellent, Sazy. And, great job. Great job, Ben. You know, the metaphor, kind of a big extended metaphor, what I got out of this was for the birds as kind of flying and letting be free, and that's what your thoughts really should be. You know, he's, where is it here, the poet's at work. Where's he been working? Hey, Ben, I thought you said you were at work, kid. And, you know, he's talking about this like he can't stop, you know, and there was another part towards the end where he's talking about how he can't stop kind of doing this. You know, why does he stop? This is his outlet. This is how he thinks. This is how he kind of gets everything out. And that could definitely be the poet. You know, I've always needed an outlet. When I was young, the first outlet I had was martial arts. And then I discovered music, and life was over. That's all I did. That was my outlet. It was, physical and emotional and everything. I was always interested in reading. I read all the time, but I discovered writing poetry later in life, and it is a great outlet. I've said before that when I write, I literally walk. I have trouble just forming words anyway when I write, and I can't, I just don't have the patience. You know, my brain works too fast. I get bored. Like if I'm thinking of things and I have to write them, I can't remember. So I talk as I write, and it's very therapeutic. There has been times when I've been very upset about things, and I walk and I write, and when I come back, I feel better. So I'm almost giving myself therapy. And I think he's kind of talking about that here, how with birds have to fly, and he has to write. It's who he is. I do believe that's who he is. He seems a very, spent a lot of time today analyzing Ben, but there we go. He seems a very, very expressive person, right? He's an artist. He's a writer. He writes for a lot of contests. So I think he has that. He has to get it out. And the comparison to birds is great. So I really enjoyed it. How about you, Aphasiata? Are you rested now? Did you get a drink? You survived reading all Ben's thing, and you're okay to talk now?
Yes.
Okay.
I love reading Ben's poetry. It just kind of like flows off the tongue. He has a really nice rhythm to it. It's like, I don't think it's any kind of formal amount of syllables or anything like that, but there's a beat to it. It has a natural cadence that just kind of happens. I liked his use of pray, pray as in P-R-E-Y, but he also uses that in connection with, like, Eden and the fallen angels, so it could also be pray, P-R-A-Y, but it emphasizes the other kind of pray. And then I had to laugh a little bit of the, like, where has he been? Has Ben been writing? Just because earlier tonight I was worried about that. I mean, on this same show, I was like, has he been writing?
Yeah.
And then that, it just, it felt like I'm personally attacked in this.
No, he heard you, so and he wrote this poem very quickly and put in the prompts, and there you go. He's answering
uh-huh.
you. he knew you were going to ask that question, so he answered you.
Probably did. And there kind of is that pressure when you do things regularly that that you will post, that you will keep up your writing schedule. And I have to say, the last couple months, I have not. I've definitely kind of fallen behind in all of my writing. I used to write to every contest for the show, even though I'm not entering the contest that I make, just so I would have something on topic that I wrote, and I have not been doing so. I have been slacking, so I feel this of, like, the, like, where have you been? Why aren't you writing? But the thing is, I like that he fights back, and he says, like, I am writing. I'm just not posting it. I am writing. I might just not be actually, like, writing it. Sometimes you're writing in your head. But there
yeah.
is that, you know, the expectation of, like, I thought you said you were a writer. And there is that pressure on things. And actually, I am guilty of being the person who says that or thinks that, because one of my ex-boyfriends was a writer, and he did not have a day job. He was just a writer. So basically, I paid for everything. But he would just, like, sit at home and seemingly do nothing. Like, he never actually wrote that I saw. It was not on paper. It was not on the computer. And I was just like, what are you even doing? And then when we broke up, he published a book. He had it all in his head. He was just writing in his head. He eventually wrote it down. And I'm like, oh, crap, you were ready. it was all in his head. So it's just, I like how there's, like, that kind of, like, pressure of, as much as I'm the jerk here, it's like people who have expectations. But this could also be his expectations for himself. Like, I thought you were a fighter. I thought you were done hiding from these thoughts. You're actually going to write them down. And that could be his self-dialogue. And even when he says, you're no eagle, you're just a weak little wren. So wren, here he's using the wren as in the bird, but recently, I guess not that recently, a couple months ago, I did a contest about Ren, R-E-N, who is a writer, kind of poet, rapper, YouTuber, who writes in a very similar style to Ben, I think, and kind of has that internal dialogue thing going for him in his writing. You're just a little wren, and he reminds me a lot of Ren, and I'm a big fan of Ren, so that's a compliment. But when I read "You're a weak little wren," it kind of made me think of that wren as well. And he wrote for my wren contest, so I'm just imagining that he is slightly referencing that. And then I like the mythology reference of the Icarus or Icarus. I can never say it, but it's the guy who got too close to the sun and his wings melted.
Yep.
Because he wanted to be able to fly there. And so it relates to the bird theme because of those wings. But then, you know, he couldn't handle it. It didn't work out. And I like the feeling that he puts into this. Like, it's the, there's, like, I'm not just some fucking prodigy. Like, there's a lot of emphasis in this. And I felt like the tone changed a lot throughout the different sections, which is maybe why he has the sections. Because then you can kind of go from those different angles. And then, like, the conversation of, and why can you not stop writing? And I feel like a lot of people on this website and people who listen to this are writers who understand that. There's, like, this compulsion to write everything down and to make it work. And I like that it talks about reading between the lines. It's unkind to read between the lines, but really, I think it's sometimes it's a compliment to read between the lines because you know that there's depth beyond what is literally written. Although my husband definitely gets mad at me when I read between the lines of everything he says because I overthink things. And I'm like, oh, so by this you mean this? And he's like, no, that's not what I said. Not everything has three layers.
Yes. Exactly. I'm feeling his pain on that one, let me tell you. sometimes I'll just set him up and say, listen to the words that are coming out of my mouth. This is what I'm saying. There's no hidden meaning. I'm saying this. And then she still looks at it because she still thinks, she still finds hidden meaning in there.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, gotcha.
I totally would, too. I find hidden meaning in everything. He'll be like, I'm not a poem.
Yes, you're analyzing everything that he says, right?
Oh, 100%. I do that with everyone, though. It's not specifically him.
Oh, okay. He just feels the pain. He just feels the pain more often, probably.
Yeah. That's the curse of living with me.
There you go.
I'm going to put you to work again, Dan, and get you to read the one by Grant G.
Absolutely. By Grant G. Darkness hangs, clinging on like death. Twilight will open soon. The homeless man begins stirring. Birds start singing tunes. He lies for a prescient moment, remembering those he knew. Birds are sitting on every tree, fence and wire, as morning chorus blooms. End poem.
And that's a really nice brevity. And, I like the reference to the homeless man because people who are experiencing homelessness have that connection to the birds, so they can't help but be awoken by them and to hear them throughout the day. There's no real escaping the outside noises for that person. But also, in that moment of when you first wake up and you listen to the birds, you can kind of pretend you're in different circumstance because you've heard the birds in many different ways. You can remember sharing that sound with someone who you knew. I like that it has that incorporation of memory because sound is connected to memory, and maybe a certain kind of bird song brings that person back to a certain point in their life. The birds sing for everyone equally. So as much as, the homeless man kind of can't help but hear them because he can't shut it out, he can't close his window, the birds sing for the rich and the poor alike. They're in every tree, fence, and wire. They don't discriminate. That is kind of an equalizer. I think that's kind of beautiful. What do you think, Dan?
I've been thinking all kinds of things on mute, so there you go. I have I'm on like six phones here, so I don't even know which mutes I'm pushing. So I was taking, you know, I agree with everything you say, and I was taking it as that homeless man that actually, you know, there's a lot of darkness on here too. So the homeless man who's hanging on, who's got problems, but he lives for that precious moment. He's thinking about things, but he's also noticing the birds. You know, you think of a homeless person who is homeless and is starving, but they also don't really have anything. You know, I think of my life, and I'm busy literally every second. You know, I'm running around like a maniac. The days go by so fast because of work and everything I do. There's just so much to do, and I have to plan. I have to try to stop and look at things. You know, whereas and you know that's not a good thing. You know, I work and make money and all this. I'm not homeless, but you know, how much am I actually enjoying life? You know, and this homeless man who doesn't have a lot and there's a sadness thing because darkness is hanging over him, but he is able to actually appreciate the simple things and the birds and the things that a lot of people just don't appreciate. You know, I still remember I went on a work ref. once a year they take us on a summit. You know, a lot of companies do that where you go and kind of talk about the year. And this past year we went to Colorado, and it amazed me that I was literally the only person that I could find that looked at the Rockies. We were staying at this hotel, and you had to kind of walk out to the end of the parking lot. You could see the Rockies, and I'd never seen them before. So I went out there, and every single day I went out there and I looked at them. And no, I talked to people who were way up on the high floor that could see them. I was on the other side, so they could see the Rockies from there, and they didn't even know if they could see them. They didn't even open the window. And I never understood that. Why you wouldn't stop and look at those things. You know, you can't be that busy that you're not noticing this amazing world around you. And so, you know, having the homeless person who, you know, is suffering, is going through this, but can appreciate the little things, thought was really interesting. A great job by Grant. All right, we have 9 minutes left. What would you like to do?
I think that's enough for one more poem. So we're on
sure.
to... a new prompt. Do you want to talk about that picture?
Yeah, this one's interesting. It's the Malden River. Yes, it's the Malden, Massachusetts River that goes into the Mystic River, the famous Mystic River in Boston. And this is just right up the street from my house. I just thought it was an interesting picture because you can see Boston in the background, some of the taller buildings, the Hancock Tower and so forth. And but it's just that it's the river, and there's some ducks on the river. So you kind of get this nature and you know, the city almost looming in the background. So kind of ducks sitting on this, and then the city kind of in the background on the Malden River. So I thought it was kind of an interesting poem and wondered where people were going to take it. Yeah. So we have two poems for that prompt. Which one would you like to try to read?
I'm going to read the one by Blue Leader One. And that is called Wild Ducks Buck. In flight. Strange and real across the skies, wild ducks fall like feathered meteors. Their motion is a blur of many wings and calls to beat the quack. Oh, fuck a duck. Here comes the Daffy Cowboys. The air is alive and hums. The sun is warm and bold. It explodes to golden rays. It is a satellite of love. And we are born, then reborn again. And again, it's magical, it's fantastical, it's illogical, how they trust, and pull.
Awesome read, and I love this one. I gave it the silver on this, and, I mean, if you rhyme fucking duck, you got me sold right there with just that. So that was fun. But I loved how he goes... It was just so interesting to me how he went from, you know, this really, you know, serious discussion of, you know, the motion, the blur, and like feathered meteors, and all of a sudden, oh, fuck, a duck, here comes the Daffy Cowboys, and he starts, it's just the goofiness or silliness or just the playfulness of the animal that's coming in. And then he kind of goes back again that it's magical. So he's really covering, he or she, I apologize, I'm not sure who Luda One is. It's back and forth between the different aspects. There's so much covered in here, and I really, really like the end. That one stanza alone to me, honestly, that could be the entire poem. Like, that could be a brevity. If you look at the picture, how will they trust, how we trust, could be a poem on its own. And I thought that was interesting as well, too, because it really is true that, you know, the trust that we have, I mean, it's a duck, right? We trust ducks, but it's still this you know, people, they're just in our world, and we leave them alone, and they trust, they sit there trusting us as well, too. So we have to have this, you know, as much as we abuse this world, as much as we abuse the other animals, there still has to be a trust that we're all kind of in this together, and we do it all day long with all the animals in our lives. We don't realize we do, but we do. There's birds flying around all over the place. There's squirrels in the trees and bugs all over. If they come in our house, then there's a war going on. But otherwise, we trust each other, and we just kind of live, you know, in a little mutual agreement there. So I thought that was really, really interesting. But I loved it. I thought it was great. What did you think? I thought you were almost going to crack up when you read "Oh Fuck a Duck," but you kept going.
I wasn't expecting that. How they trust really makes me reflect on the animals on my recent trip, because usually I find wildlife a little skittish. Like in my area, maybe because of the forest fires and stuff, they're very jumpy. So if you go near a duck here, it waddles away quickly, or if it has a baby, it will quack at you quite aggressively. Whereas I was in Victoria at, I forget the name of the park, Beacon Hill Park, and there are like peacocks and ducks and different, and like all different kinds of fowl, like everywhere. And they have no fucks given. They are not afraid of you at all. And they don't come, like, chase you for food or anything. They're well-fed. There's berries and stuff everywhere. They just kind of, like, look at you like, all right, you're a human. Like, they don't care. You can get right up close to them and take a picture, like, do whatever. And they'll just kind of look at you like, I don't know what you want with me, but sure. They don't run away. They don't beg if you have food. They just, like, just kind of look at you. And how they trust. I just was, like, amazed at how they had complete trust. And, like, these birds are well-treated because they had no fear whatsoever. And there were a lot of security, and there were signs that said, like, be respectful of the birds. And I think people are because they totally trusted. And I totally trusted them, whereas, like, again, the geese in my city, they will attack you. But we call them the flying cobras because they are aggressive as heck. But the ones at this park, no, they're friendly. I was just like, wow. So how they trust and how we trust, it's got to be a mutual trust. And it's just a powerful thing. And I think it's also true with humans. If you get your back up around people, then they feel like they're being judged. And it's a cycle. I mean, I see it with the homeless people who come into my work because, you know, you treat them with respect, they treat you with respect. And then some people who come in see them and they're kind of like afraid and they're like, I won't sit beside that person. And then there's aggressiveness because they're like, why are you treating me like I'm different? And it becomes a back and forth of, like, that trust is not there from either side. And I think that's what's true of different creatures and of people in general. The trust's got to go both ways. So there's wisdom in this.
Absolutely. All right, cool. We have just a couple of minutes left. So if it's okay, I'd like to, before we say goodbye, I'd like to talk about the next contest. I do actually have a special guest coming up. So we have an artist. Her name is Ella Rose. I actually met her at a Comic-Con, and I got talking. And she's a professional artist. This is what she does for a living. She's out of Rhode Island. And please check out the contest. Now, she's going to get involved. She helped pick out the prompts, and she's going to help judge. And she's going to be a guest on the show as well, too, commenting on the poems and so forth. So we're very excited. I love it when we have guest stars. And she's, you know, she's very interesting. I really love her artwork. I thought it was beautiful. I when I saw it, I immediately thought that it would make great prompts. And when I talked to her, she was interested in it. And so here we are. It's really great to have her. So I'm very excited about that. Everybody, check out that contest and write for it if you haven't. that'll be coming up in 2 weeks.
That's fantastic. I'm really excited for that show. Thank you, Dan, for taking care of things while I was gone. Thank you to Fill My Eyes for working behind the scenes. Thank you to everyone who shared your poetry tonight. We are officially out of time, so we will see you in 2 weeks.
Absolutely. And make sure you check out Sinner Stain as well, too, because that is back, Faziana's other show. So good night, everybody. Take care.